Romanto, Mr. Romanto. Tomorrow you got to kick to me radio, da 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 da. Welcome, 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 geeks and nerds, girls and boys, to another all-new edition of Geek to Me Radio. Jam-packed show today. We are talking with MyAmata co-founder Nigel Tomasi regarding a Kickstarter for the new campaign, Hot Lunch. We'll be talking with Gabrielle Dennis about Luke Cage Season 2. And cosplay professional Danielle DeNicola will join us talking all things cosplay. Stand by.
We're talking TV, comics and movies, and video games. And if you don't know, Star Trek from Star Wars, we'll try to explain. There are 12 doctors, 4 Hogwarts houses, 1 ring rules and more.
And if you're driving around in the St. Louis area listening to us live on 105.3 FM and 1380 AM, we thank you for tuning in. If you're hearing us out there in points on the world, streaming us, thank you very much for finding us. And of course, if you're hearing this after the fact in the podcast form on Google Play, iTunes, SoundCloud, or Podomatic, we thank you for finding us there as well. We're going to jump right into it. We are joined right off by MyAmata co-founder Nigel Tomasi. He has a manga Kickstarter called Hot Lunch that he is promoting, and we've got him live on the air right now. Thanks for joining us, Nigel.
Cool. Thanks for having me.
So you're calling from London. First of all, thank you for especially for calling in. Thanks to the time difference, because I know we're on a little earlier than you than it is over there right now. But so tell us a little bit about. Let's start with MyAmata itself, the company.
Oh yeah. So the company itself is a universe of characters and stories that I set up with a friend of mine a few years back. So what we've done, we both have an interest in Japanese culture, anime, manga, that sort of thing, and a love of storytelling. So we liked creating characters, coming up with stories for them. So we wanted to put that together into something that used the style for manga, but was something original and our own thing. So we came up with this universe, which is a television network. And between us, we write and self-publish manga-style comic books that tell the stories of the shows in this TV network universe.
And Hot Lunch is the this is volume one that's now out on Kickstarter. So how does Hot Lunch fit into that universe? Where does that story lay?
So Hot Lunch is one of the shows in this universe, and it's a heist show, a heist story where a tiger. Also, all of our characters are animals. So the main character in Hot Lunch is a tiger called Taishi. And he is an aspiring chef who has his dreams of becoming a world-famous chef sort of shattered by a plot where he's framed for a crime he didn't commit. And he sets out to seek revenge. So he puts together a crew of thieves, and they go off on this mission to bring down the shadowy organization called the Circle of Flavor that set him up.
I love some of the artwork. I've got a picture of him. I'm on your the Kickstarter page now, and he's enjoying some sushi.
Yes,
and you've got
he does
all
that
the
from time to time.
All the pledges that you guys have on here for the different things people can get. So, as far as the funding for your the MyAmata universe, did it start out self-funded and then it got an audience on Patreon? Did it kind of combine at the same time? How did that all come about?
So it was definitely started self-funded. So between us, we put in enough money to get together our sort of first set of like characters, the artwork for that, for our first comics and merchandise around that. And here in the UK, we have this organization called the Prince's Trust, and they help support through like mentorship and funding small businesses, small UK businesses that are starting up. So that plus a combination of crowdfunding. So our first two comics were the result of successful crowdfunding campaigns on Indiegogo and Kickstarter. So it's a mix of things. Basically, wherever we can get things to work, we sort of looked into them.
And I see you've got the online store too, where you can buy like men's, women's, and kids. You've got the Blake Series T-shirts, the Norio T-shirts. How often do you add new products to your line there? And what are some of your best sellers?
So, sort of a few times a year, we try and add new things. And our best sellers tend to be the ones that feature the characters. You've seen the ones, the Norio, the Blade, the Samurai Chef T-shirt, where sort of big, bold designs that feature the faces and expressions of the characters. And then that ties into the comics and the stories themselves. So we get people who, it works both ways. We get people who would read the stories first and then want to buy a T-shirt or a sweatshirt with that character. Or we meet a lot of people at comic conventions, mm-hmm. funnily enough, who don't actually read comics, but they do like sort of merchandise. So then they come through, get a T-shirt or a hat, and then maybe we'll see them again, and they'll be like, okay, I see you guys again. Maybe now I'm interested in finding a bit more about this character that I'm wearing.
And with the people, love manga. It's, like you said, Japanese culture, but it's international, like a lot of things that in the nerd culture kind of spread. And you're based in the UK. Do you guys keep track of the amount of product you're sending to or the amount of downloads or anything from which country they come? And if so, which country are they more popular in? Do you guys sell a lot more in the UK? Is it mostly Japan? Is it mostly America? Is it spread?
Yeah, so it's definitely the most the UK, and I think that's just down to us being in the UK. So we attend a lot of conventions here in London and around the UK. So I think just by presence, most people know us in the UK. But then second to that is the US, so we get a lot of traffic from our website or social media and sort of sales of comics from the United States, which is cool. And then it's like a mix of other places in Europe, Australia. I do remember sending from our last successful Kickstarter, sending a few books to random places. So I think manga just shows that it is popular, like not just in Japan, but elsewhere.
And we're talking to co-founder Nigel Tomasi. You can go to the website, Mayamada. It's MAYAMADA.com. There's the link for the Kickstarter there. Looking at the Kickstarter, you're well on your goal already. You have a goal of, it looks like, $6,641, which you're already a third of the way there, it looks like, from what I'm seeing. So that, congratulations on that, because this just launched that long ago.
Yeah, I mean, we've got some time left, so we're just like working our way towards the goal. Hopefully we can hit that sooner rather than later, and then we can get to making the book and producing it, putting it out, getting it in people's hands.
So how many other Kickstarters have you done, and what have you found, if you've done others in the past, has been the key to success for these Kickstarters?
So, we've done quite a few. Our very first Kickstarter wasn't successful, but then we kind of came back to do the Samurai Chef story, which was through Indiegogo, and then the complete volume of that through Kickstarter. And I think one of the things that I've found, like through our successes and failures, is just that pre-campaign and getting people around you to be aware of what you're doing, the work you're doing on Kickstarter, because they're the ones, the people that actually know you and want to support you, like as a individual, to help back the campaign, but then also spread the word to others. And then just being able to carry that momentum online to other sort of other fans. Comic conventions have helped to pick up fans along the way who are interested in our work. So it's a combination of those two.
And you've got all the links to your social media, too, again, at mayamada.com, Facebook, Twitter, YouTube, Instagram, Tumblr, Pinterest. Do you find you're having more success with one social media group than another? Because I know manga being such a visual medium, is it more on Instagram that you're getting a lot of feedback or following, or is it kind of spread equally?
It's spread across Instagram and Twitter. I think Instagram just like visually just works well for the illustrations, mm-hmm. character artwork, page artwork that we do. But then also in terms of just having conversations with people on Twitter, that works. So those two are, I'd say, the best like avenues for our work.
And you mentioned doing all the cons in the UK. Unfortunately, I've obviously done a lot of cons here in the States, but I've never been able to. And I see some great conventions. You guys draw some great people from the TV and the movie and the comic book realms over there. What have you been to a convention in the United States, and what would you say is a marked difference, if you have, between the two?
I have actually. I can't remember now. Last year or the year before, I went to Anime Expo at the LA Convention Center. And that was an experience. I think just the immediate thing that hit me was just the scale, because I mean, we have a few big conventions in the UK, but we're talking like, I don't know, two, maybe three times the size. So I was like, okay, this is just on another level in terms of scale and just the level of cosplay. I think a larger scale just brings, I guess, a higher standard of cosplay in the US. So just like, I just remember those 4 days of Anime Expo and just like sensory overload. But it was a really good time, and yeah, definitely would want to come back.
And the Kickstarter Hot Lunch has another 15 days to go. If you're listening right now and want to back it, want to check out the perks and everything, go to the website for them, mayamata.com. There's right there on the homepage is the link to the Kickstarter for Hot Lunch. Do you have any other, obviously, people are always thinking ahead. Hot Lunch gets fully funded. What's next for Mayamata?
Oh, so that's the great thing about our universe is that between myself and my co-founder Lau, we've always got ideas. So like ideas have never been a problem. So we've actually got a couple of our story ideas sort of waiting to come next. So before Hot Lunch, we've already put out two volumes, Samurai Chef and Sirius. And then we have another story called The 11th Hour, which Lau is writing. So once we can get Hot Lunch out, then we'll go to a new story, and then we start to look at sort of volume twos of the current stories that were out now. So there's always going to be new stories coming out, and it's just about us being able to, you know, get our fan base up to pick up these stories and share them with other people.
And I don't see a reason, like I said, you're already a third of the way there with 15 days to go, so I don't see a problem with you hitting your goal. I'm excited to kind of see what comes of this. I always follow these Kickstarters when I have someone on the show, and I've been pleased so far. Every single person who I've had on the show who's done a Kickstarter has made their goal, so not to jinx it, but I'm sure you'll get there, and I'm excited to see. So once Hot Lunch is fully funded, when you guys get your next one, please contact me, reach out again, and we'll have you on to promote the next one too.
Yeah, we will do. That would be great, and yeah, thanks for your support.
Anytime, absolutely. Nigel Tomasi, again, the website is mayamata.com. You can go there. You can get the merchandise like we're talking about, download the previous things, gift cards, and, of course, back the Kickstarter. We're going to take our first break. We'll come right back with Gabrielle Dennis talking Luke Cage Season 2 right after this, so stand by.
Hi, this is Karin Sony, and you're listening to me on Geek to Me Radio. Lucky you. Don't call it a comeback.
I've been here for years. I'm rocking my pants. We had Karin Sony on not that long ago talking about his role as Dopinder in Deadpool 2. If you have not yet seen Deadpool 2, it is still out in theaters. And, of course, we recommend you see it in a Marcus Theaters. Marcus Theaters, one of our sponsors of the show. We're actually going to have their head of their marketing department, Brett Hoffman, on next week, talking about the summer blockbusters, how they've come and gone already. It's almost the end of June here, folks. There's a lot of movies out there that have been fantastic. And we just did Superman Celebration last week. I was there live in Metropolis, and I was standing in their Hall of Heroes, the Candor City, whatever they called it, in between. I came back and was doing my spot for Marcus, and I saw this family kind of watching me, and I'm like, okay, they probably think this moron's talking to his phone. What's he doing? And they came over and they said, hey, we heard you mention Marcus Theaters. And I said, yeah, it's one of the show sponsors. And they said that they are actually, they're from Illinois. They were from, if I'm not mistaken, Grandwood Park, Illinois. They said, we go to the Gurney Mills Marcus Theater, and we love it. It's such a fantastic place. So if you can pass that along. So Brett and Chris, if you're listening, I'm passing it along. Evidently, your Gurney Mills Theater for Marcus is a just fantastic destination place.
I am going, James, to a Marcus Theaters today. I'm going to Ronnie's Theaters today because it is it's Father's Day, James.
Yeah.
And I'm taking my family to see Solo, A Star Wars Story. I think it's a good way to spend Father's Day, but I'm going to a Marcus Theater.
Yes, perfect. I appreciate that, and I know Marcus does too. So, yeah, if you're going to see it in first class, see it in a Marcus, and while you're there, sign up for their rewards program because you get $5 Movie Tuesdays. There's you get points towards concessions. I think they've got a deal going right now where the more movies you see this summer, you actually will end up getting a credit on your Marcus account for money and possibly even a free popcorn or money off concessions. And they've got some good concessions. It's not like the popcorn kind of tastes funny. It's always good. And I will say I've been to a few other theaters. I'm out and about here or there. It's never as good as when I go to a Marcus Theaters. MarcusTheaters.com. You can check out the website. Check out where they are in your area. Download your, get your tickets right there. Have them emailed to you. It's so convenient. MarcusTheaters.com. We had the chance to talk with a wonderful actress, Danielle. That's my cosplayer. I've got too many Danielles on the show. Gabrielle Dennis from Luke Cage Season 2, all about her upcoming role.
We are joined now by Gabriella Dennis talking about Luke Cage Season 2. Thanks very much for your time this afternoon.
Thank you.
So I looked over your IMDb. You've been involved in so many projects. Coming into something like Luke Cage, though, which is it's got that comic book background to it. It's the second season, so there's already the cast. What parts about this were, I'm assuming it's both equal measures, what parts were most intimidating, but what parts were most exciting for you to join a cast like this?
Oh, wow. I would say the most exciting for sure is just being able to work in a new environment, in a new space. You know, I have never lived in New York. I had never worked in New York. So being able to just kind of be plopped right into this world was extremely exciting, and to have a new experience shooting there. And then being a part of a show that I was already a fan of, obviously that's super exciting. I would say probably the most intimidating is just being the new kid on the block, you know, and just trying to make sure you don't step on anyone's toes, and you want to come in and do your job really well and, like, make everyone proud, you know, that. And then, you know, being in the presence of the almighty Alfre Woodard, who is just such an amazing powerhouse of an actress. And human being, by the way. I mean, she's just great. Being able to do scenes with her, and that was at first, you know, at first hand was like, oh my gosh, it's very intimidating. I have to work with Alfre like firsthand, up close and personal. But you know, you get in there, and she's such a gracious actress, and we had a ball. I mean, there was definitely more exciting moments, I would say, than intimidating moments throughout the experience. And wow, I mean, that's all that excitement when I tell you this is going to translate, because when people watch this show, watch out.
And it was such a rich and powerful first season. The Netflix Marvel shows have been in some ways better than some of their big screen offerings. And I will say it's heartwarming to know that Alfre Woodard was as gracious in real life as she appears, because I love seeing her on screen all the time. So thank you for confirming my suspicion that she is indeed a great human being. So you said you were a fan of the show previously. So you watched the first season before you ever were thought about coming on or being brought in for the second season?
Oh yeah, absolutely. I started watching the Marvel series with, you know, Daredevil, obviously. And then when Luke Cage was introduced in Jessica Jones, and then when Luke Cage dropped, it was just super exciting because, you know, it was just like, wow, I wasn't familiar with Luke Cage prior to Netflix and Marvel partnering up and, you know, bringing this character to this digital platform. But it was twofold. It was exciting to find out about this new black superhero that I personally didn't grow up knowing about. But then it was also exciting because, you know, I'm a huge supporter of, like, all of my peers and friends. And, you know, I went to college with Simone Missy, who plays Misty. So that was also part of the reason I definitely was tuning in. I was like, I'm definitely not going to miss this. I mean, I missed it the first night it dropped because Netflix broke, but I was definitely tuned in for all of the episodes and thoroughly enjoyed them.
So it's interesting. I did not know you went to college with her. Did you know each other? Did you hang out in the college years?
We knew each other. We had mutual friends. She was a theater major and I was a theater minor. There was a project we worked on one time together, but it was like a little brief one-night situation. But we definitely had like mutual friends, so when she moved over in California, you know, I think we've done a couple of Thanksgivings together. She's been to my house for cookouts. I've been to her house for like New Year's parties and stuff like that. So we run in the same circle of girlfriends, so it's always exciting to just kind of support one another, you know?
Yeah, that's very cool. And I love the fact that, the cast, the entire cast is so strong. We're getting the addition this season two, Mr. Shakir, who plays Bushmaster, who's a very underrated supervillain in the Marvel pantheon. How was it? How was the time on set with him?
Oh, it's great. I mean, Mustafa's just another amazing human being. I mean, he's almost a superhero in his own right as a real person. I mean, he's super fit. He eats really healthy. You know, he's a vegan and he's very conscious and aware of like things that are going on in the world and, you know, just a very kind-hearted person and all those good things. And he's really great in this role. I mean, he's a little creepy, he's scary, you know, but he can be intimidating. Our very first scene together was just like, you know, I was like, oh my gosh, this guy's freaking me out a little bit. And he does just a great job of like maintaining his accent in the series, and his action is really good, and yeah, his performance is just really amazing. And they've done Chao and the writers have done such a great job of, as you said, it's because he was a little probably more underrated in the comic book world. He makes up for it on this, that's for sure. I mean, he runs a blaze, and he's definitely a villain that I think people are going to root for, though, you know, because at the core of his villainous ways, you know, he's doing things for a better good in his mind. You know, it's not just to be a villain for the sake of, you know, killing people and causing chaos. I mean, he's really doing it to protect his legacy and to protect his people. So that at the core of that, he has a true purpose and an intent. It's just that the way he goes about it is a little scary.
And this new season of Luke Cage will be dropping on Friday, June 22nd on Netflix. Tell us a little bit, if you can, before we let you go, about your relationship, Tilda Johnson's relationship with Alfre Woodard's Mariah Dillard character. What can we expect from your relationship with her as the series progresses?
Well, yeah, I mean, little tidbits. I mean, the latest trailer just dropped today, which obviously reveals that we're mother and daughter. And, you know, there's a lot of twists and turns that's going on there. It's obvious I don't really trust her. And I think that people will just get to go on this journey of this girl, this woman who's just trying to live her life and stay on the straight and narrow path and do what's right. And, you know, she's a holistic doctor and she's very a giving and caring in person and, you know, loves to help others. And it just seems that the bad people keep showing up at her door. You know, she just kind of can't escape finding the trouble that's around her. But that's kind of what happens when you're in bed with the likes of a Mariah Dillard, you know. She's got seedy characters around her, so eventually you'll find yourself in situations that you really wish you hadn't. So I think the journey of this is going to be very interesting. There's going to be a lot of twists and turns that people won't see coming, which is actually what excites me most is when I'm watched, because I watched the series. I just finished it, I think, this past weekend, and I'm ready to watch it again and to see the things that I may have missed. But, like, even having been a part of the series and watched it, and being like, oh my gosh, I even can be fooled with the direction they may think that you're going with something, and then they completely twist it on its heel. That's what I'm excited most about, is like people really like being surprised and just kind of being on the edge of their seat all 13 episodes. And that's what's making me so exciting, is even Chao says this season two is just stronger than even what season one was. So I think it's going to exceed the expectations, and fans are going to be overjoyed with the work we've put in, and I think I'm very, very proud of what we've done, and it looks really good.
That's exciting to hear, because season one set the bar very high, so if season two can top that, that'll be a very impressive feat. And lastly, before I let you go, I know you also do stand-up, you write and perform sketch comedy. Before I let you go, who are a couple people who inspire you in the comedic circles, who make you laugh, who you take inspiration from when you're writing and doing your stand-up?
Oh, well, I find most of my inspiration usually in my close circles of, you know, comedians that I used to, I mean, I haven't been on stage in quite a while, just because, you know, this acting thing has really taken off for me. But a lot of the comedians that I would run in a circle with, you know, I find inspiration in them, you know. They're so brilliant and so funny, and the amount of work that goes into performing stand-up comedy, I don't think people really understand and realize it's extremely hard and it's extremely time-consuming. But then when you look at the likes of, you know, I used to be out in the comedy clubs. I mean, Tiffany Haddish was there before me. She's still there now holding it strong. And she's just such this inspiration of, like, one of the people in my peer circle who is really has really risen above and beyond. And it's just like, wow, you know, she's really doing it. And it's so inspiring to watch, and that she stayed true to herself this entire time. I think that's what's most inspirational, is that when you find in comedy, it's all about the truth. And when you the best and strongest comedians stay true to themselves and find the humor in whatever that truth is, and especially when it involves, like, pain or, you know, darkness, when they can find and flip that on its head and find the funny in that, you know, that's the gold right there.
Very cool, very cool. And again, you'll be able to see Gabriella Dennis as Tilda Johnson in Luke Cage Season 2, dropping on Netflix June 22nd. Follow her on Twitter at Gabriella Dennis. Thank you so much for your time today.
Thank you.
Great Hera, may the Force be with you. This is Susan Eisenberg, voiceover actress, and you are listening to Geek to Me Radio.
We are back. This segment brought to you by the City of St. Charles. Discover stcharles.com is their website. Plan all your summer events and outings. If you go to their events tab, they've got all the things coming up. July 2nd and 3rd, they have O'Fallon's 2018 Heritage and Freedom Fest at the Ozzie Smith Sports Complex. They have Riverfest going on July 3rd through the 4th as well, with music right there by the Missouri River in Frontier Park. If you're a history buff, if you want to go out and check out all the plaques, they've got the original Missouri State Capitol there in St. Charles. If you're a foodie, they have a lot of places to eat up and down North and South Main Street. If you want to go to Little O's, get a gooey butter milkshake. I'm deadly serious. It's actually very good, and quite possibly you will not need to eat for the rest of the day after having one. But they've got the Missouri Winery out there. You can sit on the winery, the Little Hills, sit outside. They've got, you know, get under the umbrella with some wine. If you want some blackberry cobbler, Magpies in the 900 block is great. All sorts of things. If you want unique shopping, again, if you're a Doctor Who fan like I am, hit the English Shop in the 400 block of South Main. That's where I get my jelly babies and jammy Dodgers from when I watch Doctor Who. All sorts of things to see and do. Plan your trip. Check out all the fun things there are, the places to eat and drink, places to stay for from out of town. Discover stcharles.com is the website. We are joined by a professional cosplayer. Our next guest is Danielle DeNicola. She has she goes to cons all over. You probably have seen her if you've been to a con somewhere in the United States in the past year or two. Danielle, thanks very much for being on air.
Hi, thanks for having me.
So cosplay, as a professional, it's got to be a very time-consuming thing, I would think, as far as developing the costumes, getting everything together, planning which conventions you're going to go to. Is it a full-time job for you?
Oh, yes. Oh, yes. I think you hit the nail on that.
And how many conventions a year do you end up attending?
This past year, I think, has been about 11 or 12. So
okay.
It's definitely a full-time gig.
And you've got, if anyone wants to look, Danielle DeNicola is her website. She's also on Twitter and Instagram to check out her work. When you got started, what initially drew you to cosplay? I know you were a video gamer first, if I'm not mistaken, yeah?
Yes, mm-hmm. Definitely, that's where it all began, is sitting in my room playing Halo with my brother and my dad ever since I was younger. Cosplay didn't come till way later because I was very, very shy, as most people in the nerd community, I feel like, start out. I actually got a very large push from a good friend of mine who had been cosplaying for years prior, who had always asked me to do it with her, and I had always politely declined. But she made me a costume one time, and then I realized what I had been missing out on.
And with the cosplay, it seems like, from what I've seen, having never done cosplay myself, except like the occasional, hey, look, I'm Han Solo when I go to a con or something. But it seems like such a supportive community. It doesn't seem like there's some people you would think there's like the rivalry. Oh, well, this person's doing better than I have. I've got to up my game. But it seems like it's just the opposite. It's so supportive. Have you had any negative experiences at all as far as interacting with other professional cosplayers?
I think you're very correct in that the community is so, so supportive. I think that the main difference between the cosplay community and really anything else is that all of these people have the same upbringing. You know, we were all nerds. We were all not the typical popular kids growing up. So I think now that there's some sort of notoriety behind it, I think we all just want each other to succeed, you know?
And with all the cosplay that you've got, you've got a lot of obviously video game cosplay. Do people ever give you suggestions, and are you ever surprised by some of the suggestions you get?
Yeah, actually, I get suggestions all the time, and it's a great way, I think, for me to find new characters I'd never heard of before. But there's been a lot of characters that I had never thought of doing before until I got a couple messages and realized that that would be awesome. So.
And when you're doing the cosplay, obviously, because if you go to the website, it's Danielle Denicola, DeNicola. You can see pictures of her different cosplay. A lot of video game cosplay, and honestly, I'm not as big of a gamer as I'd like to be, so there's some I don't recognize, but obviously the Marvel and the DC characters, the comic book characters. When you do these, do you do all the elements of the costumes yourself? Do you outsource any pieces and have people, I guess at the level you're at of cosplay now, how many times do people come to you and say, hey, I can make this particular prop for you?
It totally depends on which costume. I think most of my expertise personally is armor building and prop building. So anything that's armor heavy, prop heavy that you see, I most likely made all of it. But there are smaller costumes with the sewing element that I am not as comfortable with that I outsource out to friends. You know, it's another way to support your community when you have friends who do these beautiful commissions that you're also helping in the same community. So it's fun to do that as well. But I've had a couple people ask to 3D print me things, and that's a lane that I have yet to tap into. So the 3D print world, and I think that's really cool.
Very nice. We're going to take another break. Are you okay with sticking with us through a commercial break?
Sure.
All right, we are going to take our next commercial break. We'll come right back talking all things cosplay with Danielle DeNicola. We'll be right back after this.
Hi, I'm Becky Taylor-Klaus from Voltron. I play Pidge, and you're listening to Geek to Me Radio.
Bex Taylor-Klaus, we've had her on twice before. She is fantastic. And, of course, Voltron Season 6 just dropped on Netflix this weekend. If you have a chance, you can check it out on Netflix. This segment brought to you by Tenacious Eats. TenaciousEats.com, full contact dining. If you're a movie person and you're a foodie, this is the website you want to check out. Chef Liz is an award-winning chef. She takes a movie and she pairs a 5-course dinner with specialty cocktails with each course. You get to sit here and enjoy the movie. They bring out the courses, and they correspond to a different scene in the movie. Chef Liz actually went to film school. She knows films, and then she became a world-class chef, so she knows food, and she's bringing these two worlds together in the brilliant way possible. You want to check out one of these events, so you go to them. We have prizes that we give out. It's an interactive thing. We do trivia. It's always a good time. TenaciousEats.com. We just had the royal wedding party down at the Gaslight Grill. Got up very early in the morning for that one, but it was well worth it. If you want to go check out the previous menus, previous movies that she's done, contact them, buy tickets, all right there on the website, TenaciousEats.com. We are talking cosplay with Danielle DeNicola. With all of the stuff going on nowadays, I don't want to get too political, but with the Me Too and people being more attuned, especially to sexual harassment and everything like that, do you find it's a little easier now to be a female cosplayer, or has not much changed in the cosplay world, given that everyone pretty much knows the basic rule, cosplay is not consent?
Yeah. I think it definitely has made an impact so far. I think right now, though, it's in the beginning stages, so I don't think it's made quite as much of an impact as we'll see in the next coming years, but I think it's definitely created a dialogue, which is the most important way to start, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. And it's always when you go to the conventions, you know, they always have the signs up, and I always kind of feel bad. It's like, man, we shouldn't need signs up to tell people this. But do you ever find when you're doing the conventions? I know you said you're doing Boston Comic Con in August. When you do these conventions, do you ever kind of have to, even geographically, looking at certain areas, certain news stories come out of certain areas, do you kind of have to be a little more careful with what cosplays you choose to display, or does that ever come into your mind?
That's never actually been a problem for me personally, but I think the cons create... At least the cons that I've worked with so far have created a really safe experience. So there hasn't really been any cause for concern quite yet.
Good to know. Good to know. And there's, because I think I went to about 10 or 11 cons last year that I traveled to and broadcast live from. Did you have, out of all the ones you did last year, do you have a favorite one that was either a greater experience or just better time or anything particular that made one more outstanding than another for you?
Well, I actually got to travel outside of the U.S. for the first time at Calgary Expo. So I was in Canada, and I've actually never been to Canada before either. So it was just a really exciting experience for me to not only be outside of the U.S. at a convention, but to be in Canada for the first time. It was like the greatest possible experience for me so far. It was really exciting to see other people's culture.
Is there much of a cultural difference as far as cosplay goes? Because I, in my mind, again, not being a cosplayer, I think it's just universal. People from UK dressed up as Pokemon characters just like people in the US do. But have you found, has there been much of a cultural difference?
Not as far as cosplay, I don't think. Not in Canada. I don't have any experience anywhere else. But as far as Canada, cosplay is generally the same. But the people are just so nice.
That's one of the things I've always heard about Canada. Jim Carrey makes the joke that they apologize for everything. It's always sorry, eh?
Yes, they do, actually. I thought it was always a joke, but now I know that it's very true.
Well, see, that's why we should start being nicer to Canada. I'm not sure what the problem is lately, but see, we should be nice to them. As far as cosplay team-ups, I know I've, once we had you scheduled to be on air, I went and looked at your Instagram account as well, and you do team-ups where you've got one there, for example, I think I'm pronouncing this right, is it Clene Cosplay? You did a Team Rocket photo op. When you do these team-ups, how do those work? Do they approach you? Do you approach other people who you admire their cosplay? And is how do the team-ups come about?
The team-ups for me have always just been friends and ideas that we have together. Me and Kristen, her name is Kristen Lene, K-Lene Cosplay. Okay. She had the idea to do Jesse and James a long time ago, and it just finally got to come to fruition lately. But I've always just done cosplay team-ups with my friends and fun ideas that we have together. Usually, you know, at other cons and brainstorming together and having fun.
And I know on your website, you've got all your photography is provided by David Love Photography, Papa Nazi, which I think is a very fun name, Tiger Shot Productions. When you got into this, did photographers approach you? Because obviously there is that, again, you've got to be careful as a female cosplayer. There's some sketch people. So how did you develop these relationships? Did they approach you? Did you approach them? And what's it like to work exclusively with certain photographers?
I approached the first couple photographers that I worked with because of reputation. I think it's really, really important, especially as a female cosplayer, to do your research as far as who you're shooting with and who you're alone with and who has access to your images, because a lot of people don't realize that if a photographer takes your picture, they actually own that photo.
Right.
You don't. So that's, I think, is really, really important for people to notice. But I try to do my research and approach photographers.
And how much do you have as far as the hands-on process for the photography? Do you kind of just give them a sketch of a hey, like, for example, I loved your Space Jam cosplay, which was brilliant. Do you decide, hey, this
Thank
is kind
you.
Of the look I want to go to, and they do it? Or do you have a kind of like, here's what I'm looking for, you guys show me what there are and I'll pick from them? What's the process like as far as the final product for your photos?
Yeah, well, I work with David Love a lot. He's local to me, and he's a great photographer. We usually do a lot of collaborations, so I'll I'll send him the photos of the costumes, reference photos of the character. We go to shoot, and then we look at reference photos together. We decide like a color scheme, different ideas for each picture. So it's really just a collaboration between both of us to try and get the best picture.
And before I let you go, do you have any other ones? I know you've got a Patreon account where people can support you at different levels and things like that. Do you have any new ideas that you're kind of working on for cosplay that we can expect and we can kind of look for that you haven't done yet that you've got in the makings and they're out soon?
Definitely. I'm a big Disney fan. My two favorite Disney movies are Hercules and Mulan. So in the next coming months, I'm planning two big character homages to those two favorite movies of mine. So look out for Disney characters, obscure Disney characters, but Disney characters nonetheless.
There's no bad Disney character, so that's fun, and we'll look forward to those as well. And just to let everybody know again where they can find you on Twitter and Instagram and all that is the main source. Go to your website, and you have got the links from there.
Mm-hmm.
And it's DanielleDenicola.com. We appreciate your time today. Thanks so much for being on air, and we look forward to more things from you.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Anytime. There she goes. We're going to take our last break. We'll come right back, wrapping it up, telling you what fun things there are going on in the nerd world coming up. Stand by.
Hi there, this is Tara Strong, also known as Harley Quinn.
Or Raven, and you're listening to Geek to Me Radio.
We are back for our final segment. Thank you again to all my guests today. Nigel Tomasi talking about Maya Mata's new Kickstarter Hot Lunch. Gabrielle Dennis talking all about Luke Cage Season 2. And, of course, Danielle Denicola talking all things cosplay. If you've missed a previous show, if you're just now tuning in, be like, oh, I wanted to hear that. We will post these. They go after the fact. You can find us on iTunes, Google Play, SoundCloud, and Podomatic. Just search Geek to Me Radio, and we should come right up there. Subscribe so you never miss a show. And, of course, follow me across social media at Geek to Me Radio on Twitter and Instagram, facebook.com/Geek2Me Radio. Lots of events coming up. We just wrapped up our first weekend of STL Shakespeare's offshoot Magic Smoky Monkey Game of Thrones Season 2 through 4. We do it again next week at 8 o'clock and a 10:30 show on Friday and Saturday down at the Regional Arts Commission on Del Mar. STL Comics has a show Sunday at which I'll be broadcasting live in Earth City. You can find them on Facebook, STL Comics. Look up their show and come see us out there. And of course, if you're local here in St. Louis, also Toy Man Toy Show, new show coming up on July the 8th. I believe Disney artist Philo Barnhart will be there. We had a nice chat with him at Superman Celebration this past weekend in Metropolis, Illinois. Very talented person, worked on Secret of NIMH, worked on Little Mermaid. He had some great stories about working on those characters. And of course, all of his other, if you saw animation in the 80s, you know Philo's work. We will be back next week talking all things geek. So until then, my friends.
It's not in the way you watch I sound be. It's not in the way you watch the Flash. It's not in the way you love Scotty Young Art. It's not in the
Good night!